Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's wrong.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together? How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, we're by Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricardo on a board S&P Futures. Up $1.75, NASDAQ futures down 12. After, Ricardo, how often do I say this? Yesterday had to be one of the strangest days I've ever seen. And we've speculated. We have Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you, bud?
Doing all right.
I get
we need to change the name of this podcast.
To what?
I think we need to go with the Big Boy podcast.
The Big Boy? Well, maybe there's some people we can't let on then.
Maybe not, but, you know, if the president can have the Big Boy press conference, we can have the Big Boy podcast.
Well, remember the football story that everybody on the defense, they kept, they would have the pads they would always wear, and then when they had a big back on the other team that just ran real hard, then they put on their Big Boy pads, remember?
Yeah.
Because you can't stop a Big Boy with the crummy little pads, right? At least not kill yourself.
Well, maybe we could. Are Big Boy restaurants still around? We could have them sponsor.
Yeah, they are. There's one down in Manteno, and I used to visit my stepfather in the veterans home. I don't know.
Would you want to have one of those? You know, one of those Big Boy statues.
Oh God, yeah.
That'd be good for the yard, wouldn't it? If you really want to go all in tacky, you just put a Big Boy in front of your yard.
And it might be good for a yard in Michigan.
For holidays.
I think it's good for a yard in Michigan. I don't know if it cuts it in Burr Ridge, you know, I'm just saying. just lobbing that out there. How many times have I said the market had a strange day, but yesterday could have topped most of them. I don't know what. Something strange happened, Kevin, with the, I mentioned yesterday, I was kind of grousing about, you know, whether or not these numbers come out, because we had this massive rally the day before the CPI number. So those amongst us that are a little suspicious, so we say, will say, gee, I wonder if that number's already out. And then yesterday, the number came out better than expected, and the CPI was actually down. I don't know if I buy that, but it was actually down. And then we had this minuscule rally, and I'm going, wow, it looks like they already have the market kind of where they want it, and then it turned and did not look back. But it was a massive rotational thing. I don't know if I've seen that in years, Kevin. I mean,
explain that a little bit more.
Well, the top seven stocks that have been carrying the market, not us, all turned around and got hammered. The ones that have been up, and yet the Russell was up like 5%. The Russell has been the dead dog of the whole. I've got all kinds of clients that didn't really want to be in the last year or so in the Qs, which is, you know, the seven stocks to the five stocks, really. And we have a lot of people in the Russell. And, you know, we've been selling some calls and doing okay, but it hasn't gone anywhere. I mean, it absolutely is not going anywhere. Yesterday, the thing is up like $7, which it is never. So, for whatever reason, like most I'm going to say a lot of investors that are in those seven stocks had their worst day in ever. Our guys had a great day. the people we have in the queues, we had puts for them, so we didn't really lose anything in there. But we were long the metals. We were long the Russell for a lot of people who wanted to be more in the smaller cap. But I think I can't emphasize enough, Kevin. And I mean, I don't necessarily know what it means necessarily, other than I think a lot of people are not aware of the numbers. And to be honest, it's not something I really looked at until I started looking at it. Isn't it amazing when you start looking at stuff how much you find out? I mean, like Apple yesterday was down $5. Now, Apple has got 15 billion shares outstanding. So that's $75 billion in market cap drained out of a stock. Of course, it's been up huge the last few weeks. The total Russell is only worth $60 billion. So the move in it, I mean, I don't see how anybody could. I mean, certainly not even me, have any kind of an idea of how much these stocks are being valued at. And what is $3 trillion even mean, for God's sake? You know, then the thing is down 5% in a day. You know, what's $150 billion? Oops.
So your question to me gets to be, you know, I mean, yes, there are investment questions to make, and that's fine. I think that's a worthy conversation. But what is that telling you about the economy and about, you know, where the money is going, what the money that's, you know, that is sort of leading this country around and many countries around by the nose? What does that believe? What belief is that telling you about who's calling the shots, who's got the power, what's going on in the economy? I think there's some interesting questions there. Maybe the answers are preposterously obvious, and we don't need to go any further with that. But you know, it's telling me that there's a lot of people thinking they're kind of ruling the world.
Yeah. Well, it's honestly,
it's more so than saying people believe that business is better.
Yeah.
You know, I think people are really saying this is, you know, they have a lot of influence on the events of the day. An outsized influence on the events of the day.
Kevin, how could we even, if we gathered all the brains that are on the show, and there's quite a few, they're pretty bright. If we gathered them all together, I think the PhD thesis here, or the book thesis is, or whatever you want to call it, all the economic laws that I think still apply, and to a large extent, are, I don't find them anywhere near as useful as I once did, because all the stuff you talk about, everybody talks about on TV, we're doing this because, you know, people are going to get jobs. We're so far away from an income-based economy. It's a wealth-based economy now. I don't even know what that means, to be honest with you, in terms of what that does the people who just bought the house next door to me paid $1.5 million for it. It's a 1.5 of a city lot. I mean, I don't even like the way the place was remodeled the first time, but they're putting like $1 million in it. Kevin, those two people don't make that kind of money. It's money from Papa, you know, who must own a bunch of stock, or did over his lifetime, which I'm all credit to him. But it's people that have this, either it's generational wealth or it's stock market wealth. Somebody left you stock, it's the young people that have this dough from parents are buying homes at $1.5 million and $2 million, and the people who have a regular job are struggling to pay their rent if they don't have this wealth shift to them from somebody. It's really strange when you see. I don't even think the normal economic formulas and laws apply, and I don't know how they don't. I don't know the difference between whether they do apply or they don't, but it just doesn't seem right. You're talking about professional sports teams trading for prices that you can't even begin to justify if you had to pay actually interest on it. I mean, you find people in those franchises, in those kinds of things. You find basketball players making, you know, $40 million a year. You're sitting there going, what? Just because they happen to be in this monopolistic thing that's hot for a while. And all of a sudden you got a TV thing, which is now the opiate of the people. And, you know, it's just, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I mean, we should change it differently or anything like that. I'm saying it almost is like the rules of a normal economy don't apply. And I don't know how to change them so they do, I guess is my point. Am I making any sense at all?
Yes, actually, I do get what you're saying. I guess that, you know, from my perspective, it is, you know, trying to figure out, okay, what does this all mean, Mr. Natural? You know, from an investor standpoint, you're saying, okay, where should I be? And that's fine. That's a big part of what this show is about. I don't have a big contribution to that part of it. I'll tend to veer off, but I'm also looking at it from, you know, what makes a society healthy. And this doesn't seem to.
Well, I didn't think it was healthy in 2007 when houses were priced. The average house could not be afforded by 85% of the people. And I think those numbers are actually worse now. Yet the wealth buildup and the people that have them allows a lot of people to keep trading houses like if it's nothing. I mean, you know, when I say it's not nothing, I'm saying the house that you bought for $150 that you now sell for $500, and you buy another one for $475 or $525. You don't bat an eyelash. But the chances of you having the ability, whether you're have regular jobs, policeman, nurse, those kind of you actually ponying up money for a $500,000 house, that ain't happening, Kevin. And I don't know where the rubber meets the road here, right? Or maybe it never does. Maybe there's just going to be people that own, and the rest of us are going to be serfs, just like they were in the Middle Ages. Maybe the concept of the American middle class, if we and I lived to be 500 years, we would say, okay, the middle class occurred between 1947 and 1995 in this place called America. Maybe that's just going to be it, because that's what's not normal. In the world history, is actually having a middle class, right?
Yeah. So now let's put that in the context of everything, every weird ass thing that has happened over the last 5 years or so, or we can go longer than that, but just the last 5 years has been completely off the wall. What does that mean? Are we enabling more of that heavy handed type of government? I mean, time for me to go get out my copy of The Great Reset, Klaus Schwab's book, and say, okay, where are we steering this ship again? Because, they talk a lot in there about wealth distribution and, forcing wealth distribution. But in fact, just because they talk about it, the policies that they have are built around concentrating wealth. Because if you concentrate wealth, then the people who know better than the rest of us and know what's good for the rest of us can actually make that happen.
Well, that's
where it feels like we're going, is we're just concentrating wealth so that Bill Gates can tell us what's good for the climate.
Well, the one guy bought the Washington Post.
Force us to toe the line.
Well, the other guy bought the Washington Post. I mean, you elevate yourself into this idea that you're, who's the guy, was it Bill Ackman? He was fighting with, who's the other guy? They were fighting over that one company. One was a Big Short, one was a Big Long, and they were on TV forever. Why they were on TV, I mean, talk about waste of air time. But Bill Ackman, somebody actually asked him one day, now this guy's got a bunch of money, and he said, well, something about taxes. And he said, because I don't think I should pay any taxes if I can find a way to not pay them. I said, well, sort of everybody has to pay. And he goes, no, I think I can do better with my money than the government can. Okay, now, you and I and everybody on the show and all the listeners can point to waste in the economy or in the government, and we would like to see stuff run better. And I think it's never been run any worse, to be honest with you. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't pony up my share for the police force and for the firemen. Who the hell is going to pay them? It's always supposed to be other people because I know better.
Tom, you're also ponying it up for all kinds of things that you don't want.
Well, that part I get, but I think by and large, well, I was going to say the schools, but I bit my tongue. But by and large, I would like my trash picked up. I would like a fire for the guys downstairs in the firehouse to get paid, right? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that people don't give anybody the chance. What actually stuff that happens that people do for them, right?
Yeah. Although where I live, the city doesn't pick up the trash. You get your own.
Where do you take it?
I hire.
No, you. Good morning, Tom.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike. What kind of city are you in? They don't pick up your trash.
Well, we have contractors that pick up our trash too, Tom. So I mean, that's what happens sometimes out in the country.
Private companies. I have a choice. I could hire any of five different companies to come pick up my trash. And when a locally owned company called Michiana Recycling decided to sell to LRS, which is a bigger company, and LRS said, I'm not going to pick up your recycling anymore, you just throw it in with the trash. Then I hired a new company. I told LRS goodbye. I hired a new company, Borden, and I said, Borden, you can start on Friday when you on your normal pickup.
Well, there you go. Now you don't.
And so we get some price competition so that the government can't gouge you for it.
So when you have a fire, you what, call Ricardo?
No, we have a city fire department.
All right, well.
Saying, but there's too many things that have been co-opted by the government and things that they don't need. And, you know, I've taken a look for the township at the ambulance service that they have. There are private ambulance companies, and they can contract with them, or you know, I could call a private ambulance company, but if I call 911, I'm going to get a dispatch from the city. But you know what they do is they take these ambulances and they and a lot of what the private ambulance companies do is they will transport people. So somebody who maybe went into the emergency room for a heart attack and then has to go to a rehab center for a couple of weeks after the heart attack, that's what that's a mainline business for the private ambulance companies. Well, okay, that's interesting. Guess what? We have the government trying to get its share of that business, the local government. And the way they do it is if they don't have a call, they'll go up to the next town, camp out by the hospital, and if there's a call for an ambulance to do a transport like that, they say, oh, we got somebody right there, we'll send them, and that's your government ambulance service. You know, I don't approve of that. They're competing with the private sector, who's willing to do it at a profit, but to compete for the business. And B, if I call, I don't want the ambulance to have to come from the next town. I want it to come from the local town.
Well, I think in some of the cities, it's very difficult to determine who's private and who isn't, because you get yourself so tied together. I mean, in Chicago here, okay, the Flood Brothers and maybe one in who's the other guys? The big Waste Management. Right, they pick up and everything from all the park districts and stuff. For God's sake, they're government. For God's sake, they're not private. I mean, for lack of a better.
I get that, but for my personal service, I can hire whoever has the best price and the best service and the features that matter to me.
We don't own.
Mike, you said it's the same way where you live, isn't it?
That's correct, Kevin. And for instance, we had a Canadian company buy out the Waste Management, and then the local guys established a local company, better prices, still recycling, and much more efficient. And they actually answered the phone, and therefore they got our business. So, and the same thing could apply to ambulances also. But as you said, Tom, in big cities, things are tied too closely together. It makes it more difficult to make a decision.
You know, I think they still do one of the biggest private ambulance companies here. The Daly family.
Okay.
So there you go.
They're connected, huh?
just a tad. I mean, it's Mike. I know earlier we were talking about this the economy becoming, for most things, becoming amazingly wealth based, and I use the example. Well, I didn't. I'll use it now. What's the name of the lady who bought her father owned a whole bunch of what? Was it Las Vegas Sands? Tell us his name.
For the Maverick. You're talking about the Maverick.
Yeah, the Maverick. And so she sold the stock. Is now, you know, I won't say it's overpriced, but it's gone up a real lot as the dollar value has gone down. And so what'd she do? She took a billion or $2 billion worth of stock and sold it and bought part. I forget the number, but
yeah, she was a partner in the Mavericks, you know, a minority partner in the Mavericks, and she bought a majority stake so that Cuban could have the money to do real estate development around the Maverick Stadium.
But I mean, she's, and I'm not disparaging her at all, but she didn't, she wasn't a lawyer or a doctor or something and earned that money. This is, and like I say, I'm not disparaging.
Yeah,
I'm just saying it's different. I mean,
money.
It's the $2 billion. Yeah, you know, she was the lucky sperm club, basically. And but the thing that's weird.
That would be a good name for a fantasy football team.
Oh, got you. Lucky Sperm. But, Mike, we're talking about the economics of this in the
No, Tom, I understand what you're saying about the wealth base, because that's why I started to, or that's why I broke in, actually. And we have the elites of whether it's both parties or one party, however, they want to run things, and they think that they know what's best. And it's, you know, Warren Buffett said it also, you know, he pays less taxes than his secretary. Well, that's wrong. And whether Bill Ackman can use his money better or allocate his money better than the government, that's another story. But so we need to kind of work on the waste within the government to and that's what I think some of what the next election will be about.
Well, Kevin mentioned the word big boy. You know that term was, I heard it used in kind of a political discussion. Who are the two people from Indiana, Kevin, that they're up there now? The guy that John Short always worked for. The one guy the senator and a brother or the father?
Welsh was one of them, I think. That's who John Short worked for.
One guy was the governor and the senator, and didn't his father wasn't? The hell was the name? They're Democrats. Bye. Was it Evan Bye?
Oh, Birch Bye, right.
Yeah, Birch Bye and Evan, and then his son Evan.
Evan Bye. Well, I think it was Evan Bye I'd gotten to my destination, so I didn't get to hear the rest of the interview. But it was really pretty good. It was Evan Bye and some other, wasn't Mike Pence, but it was a very conservative Indiana person that historically had been a senator or whatever. And they were talking about government, and it's amazing what they agreed on. But they said, you know, the people in the middle class, I don't know if Bayer or the other guys, the people in the middle class better put their big boy pads on and take this government back. They're letting these other people take it. They're not ponying up the money. They have their own PACs. They're not ponying up the dough. They're not realizing how this government works and what you have to do to get your voice heard. I thought that was spectacularly interesting. I mean, for a while, I think the middle class kind of leaned on the unions, because the unions were pretty powerful, and their agenda pretty much matched up with the middle. I'm not saying, you know, the unions didn't become a little too bureaucratic and they're perfect. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is their agenda sort of matched up with the middle class, and now I don't think the middle class has any agenda. Anybody pushing their stuff to you?
Yeah, they don't among union leadership. Union rank and file is interesting, because it, at least as far as the polling in this presidential election, they're tending to align with Trump, despite the fact that union leadership is foursquare behind the Biden or any other Democrat that wants to run.
Well, traditionally.
So they're kind of rejecting their own leadership as well.
Well, traditionally, the Democrats were the party of the working class, and they've kind of gone afield from that. And
kind of?
Well, pretty much, yeah. I mean,
they certainly have.
I mean, I've been a Democrat my whole life, but that party has nothing for me now. What do they have for me? Nothing. They become, but no matter who it is, though, you can't say that with, Trump with still his business interests is not going to be governing with his business interests in mind. I mean, God. I mean, I'm not saying that's bad or anything. I'm just saying anybody who thinks that he won't,
don't you think that Biden is governing with his interests in mind?
I'm saying that the money is now, if you guys know about Chicago politics, and you know the people I'm talking about. My law firm buddies would be all pissed off if there actually was a mayor's race that was competitive, because they got to give money to both sides. It's not like you can ever be out of the loop, right? You just there's some. If you look at the biggest lobbying firms in Washington, they've got Dems and they got Republicans, and they just emphasize whoever happens to be in power, right? I mean, you're buying favor
they're
on both sides.
They're marking individual agendas, and that's that's true. And I don't doubt that. It's for the most part, is there any significant difference or noticeable difference between Republicans and Democrats? Only on a few things.
Yeah, I would say that you know, Nixon and Kennedy agreed on 80% of the stuff. That, but that back when the parties were, I'm going to say, you know, distinguishable by some sense, it wasn't like the Republicans hated workers and the Democrats hated rich people. I mean, that's never happened. By the way, how many union workers do you think we're down to? I don't know if this includes government. It must.
Well, government workers is huge. So whatever number you're about to share with us is going to be highly skewed to the government.
Well, according to the U.S. debt clock, .org, wage and salary members of the U.S. workforce who are currently employed in either public sector or private unions altogether is only 16 million.
Unless you want like 15 of them are government.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say probably 10 of them are. Well, you know, actually, I don't know that. We'll ask Mike. He's from a. Other than the bigger cities, is. You know, is all the other, I'll say, smaller municipalities, are they all unionized? I don't even know. I mean, I'm asking.
I have no idea, Tom. And at the federal level, we used to be prohibited from joining a union because, you know, then your hours are kind of limited and you're controlled, and the feds don't like that because the intel community tried to unionize. You know, they made a brief attempt at it, but that didn't work. And any national security worker, so that's intel and other folks, they're not allowed to unionize. So,
well, Roosevelt was big against government unions. He never thought it was an arm's length transaction. You could vote, if you voted a guy in, then he owed you.
Well, and that's what the Hatch Act is all about. So, but, you know, now, and this I disagree with, you know, now Trump wants to, you know, do away with what he refers to and what Vivek Ramaswamy refer to as the deep state. Well, the deep state does a lot of critical work. So,
yeah.
It's just that they can't control
his view of the deep state.
What they see is the deep state.
His view of the deep state is probably different than yours. SP Futures down 5, NASDAQ Futures up 2. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 3. NASDAQ Futures down a buck. So not much happening here. Kind of market trying to figure out what happened yesterday and see what. One thing that came in out this morning, Wells Fargo did not beat. Matter of fact, they fell short on interest income. They're down 5%, down 336. J.P. Morgan, on the other hand, beat on everything, but they're still down 310. So nobody likes the banks here this morning. Over in Asia, interesting markets here. Talk about mixed. The Nikkei's down 1,000. That's 2.4%, but still over 41,000. Hang Seng, however, is up 2.5%, 18,293, back over 18,000. And the Shanghai is like unchanged. So figure that one out if you can. Over in Europe, DAX up 75, the FTSE up 24, it's 0.3%, CAC round up 56.7. As the political thing over there seems to be calming down, we'll get Mike's comment on that. Yesterday, again, talk about a whacked out day. Dow is up 32, S&P down 49. So if they drop interest rates like half a percent or a quarter percent, how the hell does that put Home Depot up like $8? Does that mean everybody's credit card interest is going to go down when we start shopping again? Boy, that's a reach. NASDAQ down 364, that's 2%. But this is the weird one. The Russell is up 73, 3.6%. So that's, I don't think I've ever seen that. And, you know, I'm going to be able to say that again. But 10-year rate is up 2 basis points, and that down a low was down yesterday. We're back down to 4.21, so that's as low as it's been in a long time. The Bund down 4 basis points, 2.50. Japan down 3 basis points, 1.05. Oil at the top end here now, up 72 cents, 83.34. Brent up 50 cents, 85.90. Natural gas down a penny, 2.55. Arbob up a penny, 2.53. Gold had a huge move up yesterday, down $15 today, 24.06. It made it to like 24.30 at one point yesterday. Silver down 67 cents, 30.99. It was over 31. Copper up 3 cents, 4.54. The metals were on fire yesterday. Bitcoin down 278, 57,224. And let's see what it's done to the dollar. The dollar, 108.9. So the dollar has dropped yesterday. And it's get a load of this, the pound, 129.5. So the dollar really got clobbered yesterday. The yen is 159.03. So even the yen has gone up versus the dollar. So whatever we were doing yesterday didn't help the dollar out much. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. Currently 68 degrees right now with a high of 81. Sunny to partly cloudy and humid. And tonight will be mainly clear and humid as well with a low of 68 degrees. Over to Phoenix, we got 90 degrees right now with a high of 116. Mostly sunny and very hot with the temperature tying the record from 2020. Very dangerous heat. Stay indoors. Tonight, breezy with a thunder shower in spots, partly cloudy and warm with a low of 91 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, you got 14 minutes. You're looking at 31 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolves, 17 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 19 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Lastly, the MLB yesterday. We got good news for both Chicago and Arizona. The Cubs beat the Orioles 8-0, and the Diamondbacks beat the Braves 1-0. Today, we got a couple of games, too. White Sox play the Pirates at 7:10 p.m. The Cubs play the Cardinals at 7:15 p.m., and the Diamondbacks play the Blue Jays at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Mike, I just want to expand a little bit on what you're talking about, the deep state. I'll be like Jimmy Stewart, for God's sake, and not a very good actor like he was. When I ran for the board of the CBOE, this is in 92, I wasn't nominated, and there was this other gentleman, and anyway, we thought the floor community had not been represented enough, so we ran from the outside. And one of the guys who was very much involved in the CBOE, and he was really involved in the building project, but now they don't want the building anymore, which is kind of weird. When they burned the mortgage in 1997, now the police is to other places, another story. But he said to me, "I'll support you as best I can, but you got to answer me one question when you're there." And I go, "What's that, Larry?" He goes, "You got to let me know who the man is behind the curtain if you ever see him. I can never figure out who's actually running the place, even though I know, you know, Duke Chapman and Chuck Henry are good guys." And they see, he goes, "Someplace, somewhere, there's a power source that I can't put my finger on. But stuff just happens that's just not their idea." And when I was involved, guys, there was stuff that would hit the agenda, or all of a sudden there'd be an executive session and some subject would come up, and I'd say to the senior staff guys, I go, "Did you guys come up with this?" And they go, "No, we heard about it at the same time you did." It seems like there's always some outside power broker everywhere, isn't there? I mean, is that just human nature, or what is that? I mean, I have to believe that when you were in intelligence, Mike, you'd hear stuff coming through and you go, "Where the hell did that come from?" I mean, I don't know what people's definition of the deep state. Some people think it's the Cabots and the Lodges from years ago, right? Very powerful families that seem to have influence even though they're not really in office at the time or whatever. Other people think now it's become everybody with money. It's the multinationals. It's people who are tied in with the Saudis and people like that, where the massive wealth is. I mean, when you just say a deep state, what's your definition?
Well, I just think the Trumpian, and I don't have a good definition of my own, Tom. I just know that Trump and crew think that it's you know, the intel agencies, it's an intel cabal, and they kind of attribute it to the national security folks. And when I was in intelligence, there were certain people, okay, in the wake of 9/11, we're supposed to not politicize intelligence. Well, now intelligence is being politicized. So, and that started really, and I know that this is controversial, but it started with the Obama administration. So it's just, you cannot, you know, you just have to report the facts. You cannot, and then you do analysis on the facts, but people are, it's just getting too glaringly political for me. And it's on both sides. It's not just Democrats, and it's not just Republicans.
Well, Mike, I don't want you to talk out of school here, but a lot of people have felt for a long time and have anecdotal evidence, whatever the hell that means, of you can't turn some of these people off. In other words, you couldn't cut the CIA budget and turn them off for, because if they want to do something, they have alternative revenue sources. I mean, are they part of the, you know, the opium trade or something where they make some money on it, so even if they're cut off from a budget. I mean, I don't know. You hear those rumors like all the time, how you would prove it, how you would stop it. I have no idea. I mean, I mean, does the CIA totally count on if you told some people to stop some stuff? Would they? I don't know. I mean,
you can definitely influence it by cutting off the money source. It, you know, and there were guys that were, you know, when Trump was president, there were guys that were actively working against him, and he called them out. And right now, whether it's Susan Rice, whether it's Obama, whether it's who knows who's behind what the Biden dummy state, but there is someone running the show in the White House. Although yesterday during his big boy presser, the president did do a better job, although he made his usual flubs, but he did do a much better job than he did in the debate and the other times recently that he has spoken. Although they kept, you know, I think the people behind the throne there definitely want him out because, you know, even the press yesterday was asking questions like what Stephanopoulos was doing, you know, last Friday. So I want to see how all this plays out. But to me, Biden has taken a stand, and he's going to run unless forced out somehow.
Well, I take the deep.
Just to follow up on that, Mike, when I think of deep state, I don't like the term because it's just too easily thrown around and not defined. I just think of it in terms of the kind of the entrenched bureaucracy. And that could be the intelligence community, but that's all kinds of other places as well. And so just an example of it, them working is, you know, all those people who signed off on the Blinken's memo about
right, the 51
Hunter Biden's laptop
right,
being
right.
Russian intelligence operation. That's, you know, that's part of it. It's also the people who really pursued the whole Russia investigation,
right?
And that, so that's the intelligence part of it. But it's also think of everything that we have learned that everybody has known for a long time, because you know any sane person could have looked at Joe Biden and said this guy isn't right, but they kept a lock on what leaked out of the administration, and did it really, really effectively. Whereas the same administrative group during the Trump administration leaked like crazy.
You're absolutely right, Kevin, and the same thing exists in the Department of Energy, the Department of Education. It is the entrenched bureaucracy.
Yeah, and so, you know, and when I say they leak like crazy, How much time did we spend just listening and sometimes laughing at and sometimes shaking our heads at, but every leak about what went on inside the Trump administration, the Trump White House, and then the leaks that we're not getting, including, and this ties into media as well. You know, I heard Chuck Todd in an interview this week talking about something he was told about Biden by a cabinet member 2 years ago about not thinking he was going to be capable of moving on. They kept a lid on it too.
How do you keep a lid on stuff if you're Trump and you hire and fire people in 2 weeks and the people go out and they all they do is talk? I mean, who was the guy, the guy was Dr. J's buddy, wacky name. He got hired as being the new chief of staff, and he was there like a month and fled out of there. The guy who has all the dough, he owns a hedge fund guy. What the hell's his name?
Navarro?
No. Well, he was another one. Begins with an S.
When Trump fired John Kelly, General Kelly, and, you know,
begins with an M. I mean,
so I'm not apologizing for Trump. What I'm telling you, though, is that that you have a bureaucratic state, a really entrenched bureaucratic group that is pretty darn selective about what they will support, won't support, what they will leak, what they won't leak, and that's what that Project 2025 thing is about. They've spent the last several years building a database of people in the bureaucracy that can and cannot be trusted by a conservative president.
Well, it's not.
This is not a Trump initiative.
I don't know. I think that this stuff has happened, Kevin. But I'm a little bit. Scaramucci is the guy's name I'm talking about.
Oh. That guy was an idiot, and it was a terrible hire and a typical Trump hire.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is
a
lot of this.
I'm very impressed by him. Oh, now I'm very disappointed by him.
How can I put this? A lot of it has to do with what's the old adage? With the Italian house, you can kill more flies with honey than you can with a sledgehammer or something. I mean, we've had, not in our lifetimes, but, some of it has been. Everybody kept the lid on Roosevelt having polio, okay? Everybody kept the lid on Ronald Reagan his last couple years. He was probably worse than Biden is now, or is bad. And now everybody's kept the lid kind of on Biden somewhat, and they didn't on Trump. Well, what's the difference? One guy walks in the first day, and all he does is bitch the hell out of the press corps, tell them how they're all a bunch of losers. It's not how you influence people too well.
Well, if you have a press corps constantly reporting that you colluded with Russia to swing the election, and you know you didn't, and a multi-year investigation ultimately supports that, but you know you didn't, might you be kind of pissy with the press
corps? Would you be nicer to Ronald Reagan or to Donald Trump? Or Roosevelt?
Well, it's pretty hard to say. I'd be visiting Reagan's grave to be nicer to him.
Or, I mean, I think that most people felt that those two guys were of a different cloth than this guy. And all, because all this guy does is try and bully everybody. You know, and that rubs people the wrong way, Kevin. It just does. I mean,
okay. So if you want to blame Trump for all the leaks, go ahead.
Oh no, I'm not blaming
him. He absolutely deserves it, but you can't argue that it isn't selective.
Well, yeah. I mean, interpersonal relationships are very selective, aren't they?
Yeah, but Tom, where has the press been for the last 2.5-3 years? I mean, you just said it about Chuck Todd. So something has been in the works to quiet any criticism of President Biden.
Well, I don't want to be,
you know, this cheap fakes term that they came up with. Well, they're getting repeated constantly, both in media and throughout the whole government.
I mean, you don't want to get it. I don't want to be like one of the goofballs, and when there's 12 murders, it says, "Well, it's an education problem." I think when you talk about the press, and I firmly believe this, and this is, but I don't know how you fix it. 25 years ago, the three of us bought Time Magazine, bought U.S. News and World Report, and bought the newspaper. To a large extent, we hired the reporters, and there was a lot of competition in that industry, and the competition was for news. Now, we've decided we're getting our crap from the internet, and it better be free. We, collectively, not the three of us, but the world collectively. And guess what? Who's the goofball that owns the Post? The guy from...
Jeff Bezos.
Bezos hires them now, not you and me. It's not a shock to me at all. They act a lot different than they used to. Why?
Well, and there's been a lot of cuts in the news industry,
yeah,
too.
Right.
But the news industry, well, unfortunately, the internet does not do a good job reporting facts, or disinformation gets mixed up with the facts. So we lack critical thinking in American society now. So how do we fix that? And that's a huge problem.
Well, the late producer, and he's still with us, Matty Weber, and I used to argue once a month. And his position was, because of the internet, people's access to news is way better than it's ever been. And my point is, we got way less reporters doing independent things than we ever have. So we have access to garbage, basically.
Well, not if you look in the right places. There's still good news. Not good news, but factual news. You just have to know where to find it.
But I'm going to say that the Tribune has nobody reporting on individual murders at night. I'm going to say there is no city desk. I know there isn't. I mean, who replaced those people? Nobody. I don't know what the national equivalent of that would be.
Here's where I will take umbrage with you, in that the people that I think are the best reporters out there, and have been the best reporters for a long time, have gone off on their own, or have aligned with some of the new media that's gone out there. But they've gone away from the best reporters, the ones that are just, you know, don't pick a side, have moved on to areas that, you know, Substacks and places like that that don't twist their arms to report in a certain way.
Well,
they got tired of it and they moved on, and so, you know, you just like Mike said, you need to know where to look, but it isn't that hard to find either.
Well, but it's not, when I say it, I want to ask you guys about this inflation report here a little bit, so we'll have to table all this. But I guess what I'm saying, the normal way, like a Walter Jacobson back in our day, or somebody like that, who wanted to do an investigative report for the Trib or for Channel 2 or whatever, you walked in with a piece of paper and you said, this is what I want to do. By the way, it's going to take three cameramen at night, and here's my budget. And people would say, okay. Nobody okays that now in any kind of stuff that we're talking about. I mean, you're not going to get that out of the Tribune or the Sun-Times, or I don't even think you're going to get it out of the Washington Post.
You're right. You're not going to get it out of them for the most part. Although now, I've been telling you this for a while, but now you will start to see some of the critical reporting about Biden, because they want to push him out of there.
Well, the guy who was
now,
on
was now gonna... all of a sudden you're seeing it, but it's still agenda driven.
But I'm, the
and
kid
that's the problem with it.
The kid, a lot younger than me, so he's a kid. He came on the show a few times, and I'm going to try and get him back. It covers the murders in the city. I mean, the last time he was on, I made the mistake of saying, well, you're with the Tribune, right? And he goes, oh, no, I'm not with anybody. I get the police report, I go out, and if it's a good enough story, I can maybe get somebody to buy it from me. That's not the same as having somebody whose job it is, who you pay with a driver, with a camera, to cover this stuff every day because you think that's what papers are supposed to do. It's not the same at all, I don't think.
No, you're right, Tom, but somebody made a deliberate decision to cut that out. So, you know, it wasn't profitable for the Tribune or for the Post, you know, to run a city desk anymore. So, unfortunately, that gets cut.
But part of that's cut is because none of us ever wants to buy a paper again.
Well, they've made the cost of the paper so expensive.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I don't want... Hey, there's an article here on CNBC. I'm going to shift gears just for a second. We had that CPI report yesterday that showed stuff down, and we're down to 3% year over year. And this is written by, since I'm going to quote the poor guy, Greg Iacursi? Iacursi. I'm not so good on these names. But he's talking about the individual stuff year over year. And, boy, none of these things are seem like they're 3% to me. Energy's one, but electricity's up 4.4. But look at these. Look at the stuff. Items less food and energy. Man, they got motor vehicle insurance is 20%. I guess it's there, huh? Video discs, not today, and other media, 18%. Admission to sporting events, 15%. A care of invalids and elderly at home, 11%. I'm sure that's a group that can really afford it, huh? Photographic equipment supplies, I wouldn't know about that, 10. Indoor plants and flowers, 9. Window coverings, 9. Cigarettes, 9. Men's shirts and sweaters, 7.5. Even hospital and related services, they got 7.1. Where the hell is this 3 coming from that we're expected to believe?
I think that's, isn't it only the difference between 2024 and 2023?
Yeah, that's what this is. That's what this is. And the 3 you're talking about.
Right.
Now we got food at home is only 1.1. So they have that down on the year, and they got energy down on the year, but virtually
food at home is 1.1, but yeah. then you're saying eggs are up over 10%, beef is up over 10, you know, roast beef is up over 10%, bacon 8.2, pork chop 7.4, hot dogs 7%, butter 7%, baby formula 5.6, and as you go down this list, you're looking at that and saying, well, gee, those sound like important components of the basket. And yet we're saying the basket's only 2.2 and food at home's only 1.1.
That doesn't
make sense, does it?
No, I mean, it's unless there's is there flour down 2% that's not on the page or something? I mean, seems like
my daughter bakes. I can promise you that when we go to the store, that flour does not is not down 2%.
Well, you know, I don't know when this. I mean, I get kind of tired of constantly saying that the people are lying to us. I mean, Dan Janinas and I had an interesting conversation yesterday, and I was telling about my brother is in the same camp that these are. And we were talking about two really bright guys, my brother and Dan Janinas, and they are willing still to slide that a lot of stuff that the government does or people do in office or whatever. They just do. They do what they think is the right thing, and like all other people, a lot of times they mess up. I'm getting too grumpy, I think, but maybe we're getting too old, guys. But I see this happening 3-4 times in my lifetime. I'm not so sure that it's not all that it's all just random screw ups. It seems to me that after the 70s and 60s and 80s, it shouldn't be a shock to Jerome Powell that when he pours 40% of money into a place that he's got a 40% inflation and he shouldn't be lying about it. I mean, it should be right there. He should have anticipated it. So should everybody else on that committee. If I don't know which is worse, that they're lying to us or they don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know which is worse, whether they're crooked or dumb.
It almost seems worse as a screw-up than it does as a lie, doesn't it?
Yeah, which is worse, a guy lying to you or a guy that doesn't even know he's lying to you? I mean, I don't know. Boy, talk about the eternal question, eh? I don't know, but I guess if you listen in on yesterday, am I getting too grumpy? Am I accusing these guys of stuff that they're not really, they just are going from day to day and missing out on things? I don't know.
Well, I think both can be true. You can be getting too grumpy.
Well, that is the truth. But I mean, you see.
No, I just think you're becoming more wise, Tom. You're seeing kind of the wizard behind the throne or whatever we're seeing these days, and it, you know, I continue to say it, and I won't say it, but it's the election season, and they have to manipulate the facts to reflect a society that is doing better rather than doing worse.
What did you think of it was a great interview, I thought, on Wednesday with Maggie. What a great girl. Ben and Russell sent me a thing. She was doing a big interview with somebody. I forget who it was being interviewed, but I mean, she's getting there. I mean, when I told her I was had a long conversation with a state senator from Indiana, and what she said something about, no matter what, all you're ever going to hear is their talking points. Now, you guys know that when I talk to somebody, I get past somebody's talking points pretty quick. But I was stunned when she said that. that all you're ever going to hear of a politician is their talking points.
I think she's right, because let's look at the big boy presser yesterday. The president started out with his talking points. At the beginning of that press conference, it was a campaign speech against Trump. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous at this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that was going to be an unrehearsed, off-the-cuff press conference where he had a list of people to call on.
Well, do you think...
And Mike, he probably had the questions, because he pretty much had the note cards to go with it.
Mike, do you think, and Kevin, and actually, and Ricardo, do you think that what percentage of America do you think that watches like CNBC and you see the chairman of, you know, whatever company on there after the earnings, what percentage of America knows that he's given you the questions you're supposed to ask him, or else he's not going to be on TV?
Yeah, who knows, Tom?
But it's not like it's just the president.
No, it's everybody. You're exactly right. I'm sure Paul, it's the same thing, too.
Oh, sure. Oh, God, yeah. But what's her name? Yellen was worse. Yeah. We had Senator Matt Murphy, and he resigned. I don't know why he resigned, but he was like the number two Republican guy in the state Senate here. And Kathy got him, I think. Somehow he's on as a guest. And I just, you know, big, God, the guy's like 6'6", big, good-looking Irish guy. And I said to him, first question out of the gate was something, and he goes, oh, so that's the way you want to play. And he goes, it's 6 a.m., I can play that like that, ask me anything you want. And I'm like, okay then. He wasn't ready for like just a regular guys like us asking him questions, but he was okay with it. He goes, oh, that's the way you want to play, I can do that. I was stunned. I was speechless for 2 minutes. Can you imagine that?
Yeah,
actually,
you're never speechless, Tom.
But I mean, then he answered everything I said, talking about how it worked and how, you know, what happens. And the best part was, he goes, he's a Republican. He goes, well, one thing's for sure, I crossed the aisle. Guys on my side of the aisle, they're no fun to drink with. The other guys are more fun to drink with. I'm going, that's my kind of guy. Anyway, thank you guys. We're gonna head off to Carl here in a second. S&P futures up 150. NASDAQ futures down 5. Good stuff. Yeah. Kevin, I can't find anything on this list that your daughter wouldn't be baking with, and I don't see anything at 3%, do you?
Yeah,
well, and Tom, take Spain in the Euro Cup final.
That brings a question up. When you bet soccer, is it you just bet the winner, or nobody's got like a goal or two advantage, do they?
No, I don't think so, but there might be. It depends on the bookie, but generally you're betting more than one game, but this, you know, maybe they have a thing with Copa America and Euro tournament, or the UEFA tournament, and you pick the winner of both games. So Argentina and Spain is what I'll go with.
You know, there was a guy that I was quoting last night over a couple of cocktails named Mike Murphy that said Spain should win, but they always manage to screw up, and England always manages to squeak by. Wasn't that your quote yesterday?
I said that England manages to squeak by,
right?
And I don't think that they are good enough to beat Spain, but we shall see. That's why I will take Spain.
I'm just saying, if I made a bet based on excuse me, your yesterday's quote, I would have already have bet England.
Yeah, well, I think you got his quote wrong.
I probably did. I was like, who's the guy in the Sting? That Port Edgecourt horse is going to finish second.
Yeah. Oh, Robert Shaw?
Yeah, Doyle Lanigan.
Yeah.
That horse is going to finish second. What's the matter with you? Anyway, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend. S&P futures unchanged. NASDAQ futures down 13. Be right back. It's Carl Denninger.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Good morning.
Give us a call about your stock. 888-76-JACKS. That's 888-765-6257. Or email us stocksandjacks@live.com.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. Time out. Ricardo on the board. S&P futures up 2. NASDAQ futures down 8. We have some bank earnings coming out. Do we have Carl, Professor Carl?
Oh, you do. You know, I had to. Oh boy, I had to unmute just for the 2 seconds while I was listening to your last segment there about the inflation report. The whole reason you got the print you got was found in one place.
The gas?
Yeah, it was the fuels.
Yeah.
And okay, so this is especially interesting from my point of view, okay, because the biggest problem there in terms of economic indicators is found there and in hotels. And they both say we have a substantial recession now.
Oh yeah. Well, hey, real quick, would you mind just while I'm looking at it?
Yeah.
You and I have talked about after hours trading and so forth, and I'm looking at Tesla print right now. Okay, and I got a pretty fast feed here at Stocks and Jacks and PTI. I got the stock down 428. Now the next print would be is down like 8. Then it's down 6. Then it's down 9. Why do people, what is the market in here, $4 wide? Why do people trade now?
I mean, all I can tell you is that when I look at for example, what happened yesterday, the numbers come out and you get this immediate spike, right?
Boy, was that the sell of the century or what?
Well, I mean, I had some things I had to be doing when they came out, which was very unfortunate because that would have been a really nice short on the futures.
Oh, God, yeah.
Really nice short. Hi, would you like a free 100 handles? Yeah, pretty much. But then you look at what happened with all the synchronicity, okay? NVIDIA, Apple, to name two, right? All of them trade down all day long. All right, they spike up on the number, and then it's red candles. All right, and here's the thing that I find fascinating about this: you had all these people talking about how we're, this is an indication that the Fed's going to cut rates. Da 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 da. The inversion got worse by a lot.
Yeah, it got worse, not better.
Yeah, the inversion got ridiculous. We're now pushing very close to the worst numbers that we've seen in terms of the term inversion. It's the worst in the last couple of weeks, and we bounced a little bit this morning. We were close to -10.5. Now we're -10.05. So it came in a little bit this morning. Here's the problem with the numbers that you have here is that the CPI leads, it's trailing into information in that it's from last month, right? But it gives you a leading warning that has been very reliable. And I've been watching this data for 20 plus years now. And when you see, and you can see it without even having to look at this report, just go take a look at what the difference is between diesel and gasoline. Okay, because that's what fuel oil is diesel fuel. It's also home heating oil, but
nobody uses it anymore.
Well, but
some people do. Northeast
still
does.
There's a few people that do in the Northeast, okay, but yeah, for the most part, nobody does because it's expensive on a per BTU basis compared with gas. So if you can get pipe gas, you're out of your mind to run home heating oil. So we're now to the point where here, diesel is approximately in the middle between regular and mid-grade in terms of price. Now, diesel has been more expensive than premium for the last 5.
When in all the years we grew up, it was a lot less.
Well, in the summer, okay? In the winter, it wasn't because you had the home heating oil demand. But in the summer, it was trucks. That was it. It was the only people that burned that stuff. Well, of course, trucks have an awful lot to do with, what's moving in the economy, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, railroads. I mean, railroads use diesel.
Well, railroads and trucks.
Yep.
Okay, but the average Joe doesn't have a diesel car. I mean, there's some. My daughter's got mine that I had that I bought in 03.
By the way, how bad are those things? Once in a while I see a truck there and it's going to discount because it's a diesel. How bad are they?
How bad are what?
Like if you got a Chevy with a diesel in it or something.
Well, it depends on the engine. The stuff that Chevy basically ruined American appetite for diesel engines. They attempted
That's what
to
I
take
thought,
it.
Yeah.
Well, they tried to take a gasoline block and make a diesel out of it, which was a disaster.
Yeah, they tried to do it with a 350, didn't they?
Yeah, and you just need much beefier stuff because the compression is so much higher that it just comes apart, and it did. On the other hand, the Jetta that my daughter now has that was originally mine, I gave it to her on her 18th birthday, that car has approximately 300,000 miles on it, and there have been absolutely zero engine-related components replaced or touched. I mean, it gets timing belt jobs every 100,000.
We knew a guy in the 80s that had a Volkswagen Rabbit that they got 50 miles a gallon.
This thing gets 50 miles a gallon on the highway.
Wow.
And it has since I bought it. I mean, it is a dirt lock, even at 85 miles an hour. That you'll be doing 46, 47.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And it's it's a 5-speed as well.
All so right. Well, I read somewhere that for the Rabbit to be able to for you to put it on the road today, it'd have to be like 1,600 pounds heavier because it didn't have any safety equipment on it at all.
Right. Well, that was, well, I had a friend's daughter that had one of those. And, you could, a couple of guys could pick the back end of the car up.
We did once. We put it sideways in somebody's parking lot after a softball thing when some of my guys saw the guy in the other team and put his car sideways down in Muncie in the end.
We had some big guys. Yeah, well, but with a Rabbit, you don't need to be all that big. A couple of average dudes could pick the back up. But this is where that is, okay? And this is why you got this print. The thing is, this does not tell us anything about the stuff that you and I have to buy. Car insurance, of course, is still up 20%, right? That's in the numbers.
What are you guys paying for gas?
We're right around $3 a gallon right now.
How the hell are you doing that when our vibe's $2.55?
Because we're the state and local taxes are about 50 cents.
Okay, but I mean, so here in Illinois, I was talking about it yesterday when your name was being tossed about. I mean, in Illinois, we're talking $4.10, and in the city, it's $4.60.
Right.
I mean, every time somebody goes into the station, and we love our government. And every single time some guy with no money piles in and puts in 20 gallons, he's talking $12 difference than any other state.
Right, and the $12 goes directly into your government's pocket.
Yeah, and in the roads,
it's not federal. That's all
right,
state.
And the roads still sold. The federal is what, like 15, 14?
Yeah, the federal is the same everywhere, obviously, because it's federal, right? But that's the thing. So during the pandemic and the early parts of it, nobody was driving, so gas was extremely cheap, right? I was moving at the start of this thing. Which was great because I was hauling a big butt trailer that you make my truck get 9 miles a gallon. All right, but fuel was a buck and a half, right? I mean, I had seen those numbers in 40 years. But the thing is this, there are a bunch of states. So Indiana used to be one of the cheapest places to get fuel in the United States. Okay, it had been forever because its state fuel tax was so low. And during that time, the Indiana state legislature basically doubled the state tax on gas. All right. So today, there's no bargain there anymore.
Well, Indiana always has that wacky thing where your license is based on the value of the car. So you think you're getting a bargain there, but you're not if you got a decent car.
By the way, Kentucky does that too. There's a number of so-called, you know, southern low tax states that do that sort of nonsense. It's one of the things I like about Tennessee is that, you know, my tags are $22 a year, and it's for that reason. All right, I mean, I've got two cars and a trailer, and every year I go to renew them, and it's, you know, $70. Yeah, okay, big deal. But yeah, go across, you know, go an hour up the road into Kentucky, and you got a new car? Oh boy, here it comes!
Yeah,
right. And it's like, so that's that. You know, that personal property tax thing is a big deal in a lot of places. But what you have to look at where the ratchet jobs come from, though, Chief, because this is, you know, this is the thing that nobody wants to take on, all right? And this is one of the problems I have with the potato that we have in office right now. And by the way, Trump as well, okay? And that is, let's just take one small example. All right, you're an individual and you have a computer, and your computer breaks. I mean, things break, right? So you go to buy another one, okay? And as I've pointed out many times, the problem I have with this this whole AI ramp and this crazy crap that's going on with, you know, the Magnificent Seven, is that they're spending insane amounts of money, but they're not billing anything for the services that they're producing with this. All right, at this point, now everyone says, "Oh, it will come, it will come." Well, it may come, but when it does, the cost of the chips and the stuff to deliver it is going to have dropped by half. And by the way, so is the power consumption, which means it's uneconomic to even use the old ones, even if you own them. All right, it makes no sense for you to use them, which means the guy who waits is going to destroy you. All right.
Oh yeah.
But no, and you know, everyone says, "Oh, what, you know, first mover." Well, first mover is only an advantage if you can monetize it. If you can't turn it into money, it's a millstone around your neck. All right, so take that. But then you, as a consumer, you have a laptop, and let's say the battery's getting to the point that it doesn't hold charge anymore, which does eventually happen. And you can't buy the batteries anymore because the manufacturer doesn't make them. All right, so you, even though the battery's replaceable, you can't get a new one. You can try to buy a Chinese ripoff clone that might set your laptop on fire when you go to charge it. But you say, okay, you know what?
That you wouldn't want. Well, that happens once in a while.
That'd be bad, you know. It would be barbecued parts of your body that shouldn't
especially be. Especially if you're, like, on a plane or something.
Well, yeah, that could be a problem. So you say, all right, but I can have a computer that is twice as fast as what I have now. Still costs about $1,000. About the same amount of money as I paid for the one, you know, 5-6 years ago. And it's much more capable, and it's brand new. All right? So, all right, I'll do that. I'll buy that. It's been 5 years. It's $200 a year. It's not so bad. So you go do this. And then you find out that although you bought licensed software run on one computer at a time, owned by you, and you paid for it 5 years ago, in the middle of this period of time, the manufacturer of that software went to a cloud-based model and they shut the servers down to validate the licenses. And so when you go to transfer your data onto this new machine and you transfer the programs, none of them work. And all of a sudden, you are stuck with two alternatives. One of them is you have to pay now on a subscription basis for this, or all the work that you did over the last 15 years becomes permanently inaccessible because it's a proprietary data format that nothing else can read. Now, how is that legal? Okay, remember, when you bought the stuff, you paid for the right to use that on one machine for your personal use or professional use or whatever, but on one computer at a time. Now, most of the companies allowed you to load it on more than one. Typically, it's two, because you could have a desktop computer and a laptop, right?
Yep.
But only use it on one computer at a time, and the way they enforce that is it calls back to a licensed server on the internet somewhere and says, "Hey, is anybody else using this right now?" Okay, and if the answer is yes, it says, "Bite me, you're obviously trying to steal it." If not, everything's fine. All right, but then they shut these validation servers down, and now you can't reinstall at all.
Has Microsoft ever been spanked by this government. It's only just.
Oh, by the way, do you know who is the worst offender in this regard?
I'm going to say Microsoft or Google, but
wrong. Adobe.
Okay, well that would have been my third choice, actually.
By the way, Adobe's their PSD format for Photoshop is proprietary. And oh, by the way, they do the same thing with Lightroom, which photographers like. Okay. And if you have one of those boxed set pieces of software, which, you know, at this point, it's, you know, 7-8 years old, was when they stopped selling the boxed set that you could actually buy and forced everybody that was a new customer into the subscription model. If your computer breaks, you have no choice but to buy another one because you can't get the parts for the old one anymore. And besides, even if you did, the machine would detect that you changed the hardware. So it would say, well, that's a different computer. And it is, physically. You can't reactivate that software at all.
Really?
And they've done this on purpose. And here's it, essentially what they did was they stole something from you and they hold you hostage because all your old work is in their proprietary format, and either you pay them or you lose access to something that you created. You personally created that, and they stole it from you.
Wow. Two things I want
to... Why don't you go to jail for this?
I mean, I see these kinds of things in my industry, and you tell me about them in other industries, and I just... my mouth is open in horror. I guess I don't know what... hey, did you...
But this is crazy.
This is
forced spending. Okay, that consumers get hit with this all the time. You look at modern cars, for example. Okay, your radio. I know somebody that had the radio in a relatively new car. It's not that new, but it's 4 years old. It's out of warranty. The radio stopped working. They go into the dealer, $3,000 to replace the screen.
The
display.
Why can't you go to the junkyard and grab one?
Because it's coded specifically. You have to have a dealer tool in order to put it in.
Really?
You plug it in, it won't work. So, and here's the nasty part of that: the settings for some of the things in the vehicle and the alerts and things like that are on there. So you can't just say screw it, I don't care. It's not a choice.
Wow, I was driving around on Wednesday, and last night, who do you think I thought of but you? Somebody came up with some new study that said all these things that won't let you change lanes if you don't have your blinkers on and all these kind of assists and all this stuff, except for the automatic braking, none of them have shown to do any good whatsoever.
Yeah, well, Chief, you know, I was just talking about this with the whole insurance thing. There was a story showed up in the Wall Street Journal. The paper of business record, right? Medicare Advantage health insurers, they went and analyzed this. Now, remember, CMS is supposed to have an anti-fraud division, right? Part of the reason to have a government involved in this stuff is that they're supposed to detect people trying to screw you, right? Okay, so they did such a great job, though. Oh, those government guys, they're so fun. They're fabulous. The journal found that these guys have been claiming things that are anatomically impossible. As an example, on Medicare, to get the higher reimbursements, one of the examples that they used was that they are claiming that people have diabetic cataracts in their eyes. The people who are they claiming this against not only don't have cataracts, they're not diabetic.
Well, did we ever get to the bottom of the people that didn't have COVID yet got the bonus?
Oh, well, of course, nobody's going to go after any of that, right? No. That was all scam. All right, now here's the best part of this. They've been caught doing this with people that had cataracts for other reasons because, you know, as you get older, it's a very common thing to have happen, right? They had the surgery. They have plastic lenses. You can't get a cataract in a piece of plastic. The diagnosis is anatomically impossible.
Yeah, how that could happen. Hey, well, guess what?
They get paid more every month because this guy has this condition, supposedly has this condition.
Well, since you brought it up, I will read you, Lucy, the Illinois taxes. Federal is actually up to 18. I thought it was like 4. That did go up. Was it Trump or one of those guys raised. It was like 14 forever, right? Well, it's 18. Underground storage tank and environmental impact fee, 1 cent. State sales tax. Now, we pay sales tax on the other tax, which is even infinitely more screwed up. Right. It's 15 cents. Chicago sales tax, 1.25, so that's 3 cents. Cook County sales tax is 4 cents. Regional Transportation Authority tax is 2 cents. Now we're up to state motor fuel tax is, 55? Chicago motor fuel tax is 6. Cook County motor fuel tax is 6, for a grand total of 94 cents. Third highest in the nation. Yes. Right. We should be shooting for number one, I say. I'm having some issue, nobody needs to know or whatever, nobody cares, some issue with a title on the truck I just bought. Anyway, but did you realize that the Secretary of State's offices got hacked by somebody, and at the risk of spilling out everybody's insurance numbers and driver's license numbers and everything else, somebody paid a $50 million ransom to somebody?
Yeah.
Who writes that check, and who do you send the check to?
Oh no, they don't. It's Bitcoin, and this is one of the things that I think is so amusing about this is that everybody says that one of the advantages of this is that it's a great criminal enterprise because there's no way to trace it, right? It's supposedly anonymous. Well, that's the biggest lie that's ever been told. And anybody that actually believes that, you should just take them out back behind the barn and shoot them. Because the entire premise of a digital currency, any digital transaction system, is that in order to be able to actually prove that it took place, in other words, that you actually have the value that's claimed to be there, you have to have an essentially unbreakable and indelible ledger. That's the entire point behind these so-called digital currencies. And so the problem with this is that other than statute of limitations, there's nothing preventing them from discovering 20 years from now that you bought cocaine using Bitcoin and throwing you in jail for it. All right? So the idea that it can be used as... No, it's exactly the same thing. The entire point of these guys using Bitcoin as a means of transfer is they get it out of the United States in milliseconds, all right? And they're in a place where nobody's going to make them pay it back, a.k.a. China, Russia, whatever, right? Ukraine. And so this... It has nothing to do with the fact that it's anonymous. Not anonymous. If you try to do that and you're here in the U.S., you're going to go to prison.
So right? it's the same as having somebody fly a helicopter over to Eastern Europe and drop $50 million out of the helicopter. Once it's over there, you can't.
Absolutely. I mean, it's worse than that in a way. That you don't have to actually fly the helicopter. It doesn't cause any fuel, and the plane can't crash, right? So, but yeah, they know exactly what wallet it went into and how it was distributed after it was paid. The problem is where it is, nobody will go get them.
Well, I mean, if we have somebody who has a banking deposit here, well, I don't know if Russia or China do anymore, but if we did, let's take it out of there and say, you guys better find these dudes.
Well, you know what? It's very easy to do that. But we don't have a government that cares about such things, just like we do. We've had 8 U.S.C. 1324 has said that for, since the 1950s, if you harbor, pay, employ, whatever, an illegal alien, you are subject to 10 years, well, anywhere between 5 and 10, depending on the offense, of prison time. Okay, not a fine. You go to prison. And, oh, by the way, if that illegal immigrant kills somebody in the United States, it's life. It's not 5 or 10 years. It's you're done. Bye.
Carl, how long would it take if one of us got trapped into the Oval Office? How many people would it take, and how long would it take to go through? Well, we could do it in Chicago. We could do it in Illinois. Go through all the laws that nobody gives a crap about anymore and have never once been enforced to get rid of them. It'd be a full-time job for years.
You know what? If you make me president for tomorrow, right? I mean, I know it is going to happen, but you make me president tomorrow, I'll solve the illegal immigration problem and the medical and budget problems in one day, and the impact will be immediate, and it will start to be felt in the economy immediately. The entire housing affordability problem will disappear. It'll be gone immediately because you're going to take 7-8% of demand. 3 years worth of supply is going to come out of the market instantly because all those people are going to leave. And I will have to throw a half dozen people in jail, but the first time that I show up at a major corporation with a DOJ and I haul the CEO off to prison and he really goes to jail, okay, he really goes, game's over. There won't be any more of it.
But what's the idea we talk about? I don't want to use the term I was thinking of using, but when we have people from China and other places, in India, that come here on these work visas, they get paid a lot less than people here, and they
That's illegal, Chief. No, but they do it anyway, right?
You can't. No, but you can't, and that person can't. If another company down the block says, "Gee, I'll pay Joe $50 an hour what he's worth. He's only making 30," the guy can't leave, right? He's got to stay with the first company.
That's right. And
what's that? I mean,
H-1Bs are bound to the people. The point of H-1B visas, the entire purpose, is that there's this rarefied air among humanity, and it's real, right? These are the guys with 155 plus IQs, right? There aren't very many of them because that's, you know, 4 standard deviations off the mean.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, but there's a handful of those people. And you can't control where they're going to pop up in the world, all right? Some are going to pop up in the United States. Some are going to pop up. But, you know, look, the United States is
and some become the Unabomber.
Well, and some are crazy, yeah. Right? I mean, it, God forbid if you get somebody like that that's psychotic, because then you're really in trouble, right? Because he's smart on top of being psychotic. But, you know, and the Unabomber got away with it for quite a while. Gee,
yeah.
Big shock. He was intelligent. So the thing is that you want to be able to bring those people in the United States, and so having them able to jump the line, if you will, on immigration, for work purposes, made sense. All right, the intent of the program originally made sense. We did this with the German rocket scientists after World War II. We basically we hijacked them all, and that's why we had a space program. It would have taken us a decade to figure out the things that they already knew. Fine, but like everything else, it got corrupted, and now it's used to bring Pajit over here. He can't code his way out of a paper bag, but he works for half the price of an American.
Well, with the we got to dash off the break here, but how many? Yeah, it was in William Kennedy's Freedom from Fear. How many, because the fascist guys were doing their stuff, how many Nobel Prize winners in physics and those kinds of things left Europe before Germany started the war? And they were all here.
Well,
Guys like Fermi and all those guys, they were all here. They all got out of Dodge. S&P futures down 50 cents, NASDAQ futures down 11. Hey, on break, Kevin sent us a thing here about the Bitcoin. How did they get, you saying that you could probably, how did they get half the money back for the pipeline stuff? They didn't get it out of their wallet fast enough or something? Just think about it on break and see how they got some of that back. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, Olympic Stocks and Jocks. Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. I can't wait to get the tax thing of Illinois off my screen here because I'm tired of looking at it. The wholesale prices rose 0.2% in June, slightly hotter than expected. So there you go. Anyway, the rest of the stuff we have: S&P futures down 25 cents, Nasdaq futures down $11. So that didn't wow the market at all. Also, going to ask Carl about bank earnings. Dow futures are up 34. Over in Asia, talk about a mixed bag. Nikkei down 1,000 points. It's 2.4%. Hang Seng up 461, 2.5%. And Shanghai dead flat, up 91 cents. That's a mix. Over in Europe, the DAX up 59.3%. FTSE up 20.2%. CAC around up 54.7%. So those guys are... European stocks hit one-month high ahead of inflation print. Okay, so there you go. Yesterday, Dow was up 32, S&P down 49, NASDAQ down 364, that's almost 2%, 1.95. But the Russell was up 73, 3.6%, hence one of the craziest days I've ever seen. Bonds were up 2 basis points, 4.21, they got cratered yesterday. Bund up 5 basis points, 2.52, Japan down 3 basis points at 105. Oil, I'm going to say we're very, very close to breaking out of this range here, up 79 cents, 83.41. I'll let you say the new range might be 76 to 85, so maybe we have nudged up a little bit. Went up 60 cents, $86. Natural gas unchanged, 227. RBOB up a penny, 253. Gold down 1460 after a huge run up yesterday, but still over 2400, 2407. Silver down 72 cents after a big run up yesterday, 3096. It was over 31, obviously. Copper up 6 cents, is up 456. It's been a steady winner. You could have got copper under $4 maybe a year and a half ago, and it's a big move, copper. I mean, over that period of time, you got to be patient, but you got it. Bitcoin down 164, 57,342. And the U.S. dollar has been going south here. The euro is up to 108.8. It was under 108 for the longest time. British pound is up over 129. It was 127.8 for a while. These are 1.5%, 2% moves in currencies. Are big moves. And the Japanese yen is 158.89. It was 161. So dollar's been getting clobbered the last couple days. Ricardo, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 70 degrees right now with a high of 81. Sunday, partly cloudy and humid. Tonight will be mainly clear and humid as well with a low of 68 degrees. Over to Phoenix, 91 degrees right now with a high of 116. Mostly sunny and very, very hot with the temperature tying the record from 2020. It's going to be very dangerous heat, so try to stay indoors. Tonight, breezy with a thunder shower in spots, partly cloudy and warm with a low of 91 degrees. On the traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, 22 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 38 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 20 minutes. And inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 29 minutes. Lastly, the MLB. Yesterday, the Cubs beat the Orioles 8-0, and the Diamondbacks beat the Braves 1-0. And today, we also got a couple of games. White Sox play the Pirates at 7:10 p.m. Cubs play the Cardinals at 7:15 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Blue Jays at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Carl, how did they manage to get the money back on the Colonial Pipeline thing?
Well, so basically, all right, so the way Bitcoin, you know, works is that it's kind of like PayPal or any other peer-to-peer system, right? You send the funds, the Bitcoins, which you have to have gotten somewhere first because, you know, somehow you had to get them. But you send them to the recipient, and the recipient now has them.
Right, so whoever... The state of Iowa or someplace who got hacked has to somehow go out and buy $50 million worth of bitcoins.
That's right. So they have to go buy the $50 million worth, and then they transfer them, just like you would wire money to somebody, right? Except that it's, you know, it's Bitcoin. All right, so that happens. It's not instant. This is one of the problems that you have with these things is that there's... The change that you put in when you transfer it has to be validated by a bunch of other people because otherwise I could cheat. All right. So the signatures on the transactions have to be verified by a critical mass of the miners, who are the ones that are running these nodes, before that transfer is considered confirmed. And that does take some time. It's not instantaneous, but it doesn't take very long. Now you have the Bitcoin, the bad guy that did the hacking, right? He's got him. Okay. But that doesn't do him any good. He wants to buy coffee or gasoline or whatever with it, right? Wherever he is. So he has to transfer that out into some form of cash, some form of actual funds. And that takes some time to do, because if you all of a sudden pop up and try to turn 50 million worth of Bitcoin into $50 million, the guy who's going to take the Bitcoin from you, he might get a little suspicious that that's stolen, right? And by the way, since there's a digital signature on every one of these transactions, if he gets suspicious and it is stolen, it's going to get clawed back from him. It's going to get taken.
Let's drop this down for a second to a numbskull like myself. Suppose somebody sent me one Bitcoin.
Right.
Where do I get the 60 grand in cash in my greasy little palm?
Well, somebody has to give you $60,000.
Who's that going to be? A bank's not going to do it.
Well, somebody has $60,000. But
who has $60,000 sitting in their piggy bank?
Well, you probably wouldn't be one. It wouldn't be one transaction. It would probably be split up. I mean, you'd do it through an exchange, and you know, so all right, who has 100,000 shares worth of Intel stock, right? But probably not. You sell 100,000 shares. It's probably 25 transactions.
Okay, so I mean, if I have one, I go to one of these exchanges, and somebody somewhere sends 60 grand to my bank account.
Yeah, but you can infinitely divide those. It's not like a share of stock.
Okay.
It's integers. Okay. You can send somebody 4/100ths of a Bitcoin.
All right. So does that person? Do I got to meet him on the by the horse, or does he send me a check, or what does he do?
Oh no, it's an electronic transfer. But the problem with this
to my bank account.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now the problem is this: if that Bitcoin turns out to have been stolen, all right. It could theoretically be clawed back from him.
But if it's somebody paid it for me for ransom, I didn't steal it.
Yeah, but it was illicitly gotten.
Without a doubt, I get that. But I'm
just saying, there's the possibility it could be clawed back. Okay, so as a result, large transfers, really large ones, where there's a know your customer problem because the guy might be a crook. Tend to be somewhat problematic. It takes time to break them down and get those transfers to all be done. Well, guess what? It took time, and in the time it took, the feds were able to chase it and got a bunch of it back. So that's...
Well, how'd they do that? How'd they access the... Kevin says you're probably going to find somebody who's willing to do it very fast and give you 45 grand for your 60,000 Bitcoin.
Probably. But you know what? It didn't happen fast enough, okay, for them to clear all of it out of the system where it couldn't be effectively clawed back. I mean, go ahead and try to get it back.
Who do you call Bitcoin? Say this,
well,
this is
no
good.
No, there is no central thing. That's the whole point of Bitcoin, is that there is no central deal. It's somebody else who wants to own them and will give you cash in exchange for them.
So they were able to somehow enter the system, and the people who have to approve it say don't approve it and somehow torpedo the whole thing.
Well,
part of it,
right. The thing is they got some of it out of the system before the feds got their hands on the on the exchanges and said, "Hey, you clear these, we're going to come after you." All right.
Okay.
So they may, I mean, it's kind of like it's a situation, if you think about it, if you got a briefcase full of $100 bills, if they're in sequence and they know the serial numbers, your attempt to liquidate those could be somewhat of a problem, right?
Yeah.
But the guy who has one or two of them probably isn't going to end up losing them, isn't going to get them seized. But if you've got a whole stack, yeah, that's going to be trouble, all right? Because now all of a sudden they're going to be like, hey, that's stolen goods, and bye-bye, and then, okay, where'd you get them from?
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it is not an untraceable transaction, which a lot of people believe it is. It's not, by a stretch of the imagination. It's just that if you're going to pull something like this, by the way, speaking of these things, I don't know if you're aware of this, but AT&T apparently just got hacked. This has been reported. And essentially all of their customer data has been stolen.
Okay.
Well, and, you know, I mean, who knows if there's going to be a ransom on that? You know, probably not so much. But there have been several that haven't talked about.
What is my, I mean, I ask this question once in a while, and I'm not expecting you to be the sleazebag on the dark web, but what is my Social Security number worth to anybody?
Well, these days, not as much as you would think. But the point isn't the individual value. It's the fact that if I steal an entire, you know, a whole ledger full of them, you know, they were 10 cents a piece, but I got a bunch, right? It's like the old skimming game, in a sense, that, you know, that some people in banks figured out. We could get a penny of everybody's interest and nobody would realize that it was gone.
Well, they used to get a percentage. They'd round the penny, right?
Well, I understand, I'm saying that's, you know, that was the old game, right? Or one of the old games is that crooks would run, and most people, I mean, you know, 99.9% of the people would not realize that they'd been robbed, and they've been robbed in very small amounts, but over large numbers of people, it makes it adds up to a lot of money.
Well, if people don't, not everybody's. That's what a lot of people are younger, you know. You don't remember, like, the credit union at St. John Fisher, where somebody would actually go through everybody's account and say, Carl had $5,000 in here, we're paying 3%. So $5,000 times 3% divided by 12, and that's what they added to your
right.
Your ledger. And all of a sudden somebody said, why don't we get computers to do this? And once the computer did, you're left with all these, he gets 1 1/3 cents. Well, what are we going to do with the third cent?
Where'd the third go?
Yeah, right. Where did the third go? Well, before, it was if it was over half, you got the other penny. If it was below, you didn't get it, right? That's the way you round stuff. Well, now somebody said, wait a minute, why don't we just give them the number and the part that's left, why don't we put it in this other account? Nobody will ever know. And
why don't I just steal it? Yeah.
Why don't I just take it? By the way, we got 90 bazillion accounts. Hey, I'm not going to let you go without... You got to answer me this. And all the stuff that I'm good at in this business, you know, I don't think there's so many people better at putting option protective strategies around people and matching up portfolios, risk and stuff, than me. But I tell you what, you know, I have all my years in this business, I have zero ability to value these banks. I mean, they're so big, they're so protected. They pay their people way too damn much to where I don't think the shareholders get squat of what they should be getting. And yet they come out with these earnings. I have no idea whether they're good, bad, or in the barrel. And yet other people seem like they have this all figured out. Do they really, or are they just BSing people? I mean,
they're BSing people. You know, it's that there was going to be a squeeze on net interest margins. Anybody that didn't see that one coming a mile away is out of their effing mind, right?
How can it be a squeeze? They're still not paying anybody anything. They're charging 25% on credit cards. Where's the squeeze? That's a pretty good spread to me.
Oh, look. What do they do with the cash after they get their hands on it? Well, it all goes into the treasury market, right?
To the extent they can't get people to borrow it on a credit card.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, but the world is circular, right? The cash comes from one place, goes somewhere else. It's the way life works. And, I mean, you know, you look at an inverted curve. What does an inverted curve say? An inverted curve says that you're paying short-term rates, but the long-term rate pays less. Well, wait a minute. Isn't the entire point of a bank to borrow at the on the short end and lend on the long end?
I have my account here at Lakeside. If I wandered into Chase this morning and drop $15,000 in a checking account and open one up, am I getting any interest at all? I'm thinking no.
No, probably not. But there's people that, you know, are buying CDs and they're in the treasury market. The banks are in the treasury markets every day. So the fact that this curve By the way, I doubt that they expected it was going to stay inverted like this for a year and a half.
Yeah.
All right. But it did. And so, you know, all their strategists have been on the wrong side of that deal, because normally you would like to feast on those fluctuations, right? I mean, that's the whole point is you, okay, well, guess what? We have an inverted curve. We're going to bet that it's going to, you're going to get a steepener. And when that happens, we're going to make money. Then it doesn't happen. It gets worse and you lose money. Big shock. By the way, the PPI came out when we were on break.
Right. It was up 0.2, right, or something?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, first off, remember, we just had the CPI, and all of this great moderation was from the fuels side of things, energy, right?
Right.
Last couple of months, energy, materials, unprocessed goods for intermediate demand, last month up 4.7%, not ticks, percent.
How does that match up?
Well, it does, because unprocessed things have to go, you know, your oil has to go through a refinery, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's going to. And guess what's going to happen when it comes out on the other end? There goes your nice.
Well, that's, we, as you are aware, since you're on Stacks and Jacks a lot, every morning I give this this RBOB. RBOB's up to like 255. That's higher than it's been in a long time. How do the pump prices go down when the RBOB keeps going up?
Well, supply and demand, my friend. I mean, if you used to be able to make 15 cents a gallon on a gas because, you know, supply was reasonably tight and demand was robust. Now you have a decent amount of it and nobody's going anywhere. By the way, this is why hotel prices are down. And if you want to drink in Gatlinburg, you can go down to the middle of Gatlinburg during the midweek and pay middle of February prices for a hotel room.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the... actually, they are... this is the RBOB price. For those who don't know what RBOB is, it's the wholesale price of gasoline in, what, New York Harbor or something like that?
Yeah. It's
unleaded RBOB gas.
RBOB is unleaded gas, and it's the wholesale price X all the taxes.
Right.
Right.
Well, it was in June 3rd, it was 234, and now it's 252, but it actually spiked in... July 3rd, which, go figure, because of the holiday.
Big shock, right?
At 260. Yeah. But we were at 282, 415, 20 in April.
Yeah.
So we were way higher. And, boy, during the COVID, well, this is, I only got the 1 year chart here, but I'm going to say, I'll sort of COVID up here. It's got to be really low at one point. When was COVID? July. I'm going to, boy, look at this. 56 cents.
Right.
And 329.20. Right. What would COVID started whenever we got locked down? Oops.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I was moving. And like I said, I feasted on that because I was driving my truck a bunch, hauling a trailer. I got 9 miles a gallon. I really liked pulling into the gas station, spending basically nothing to fill the tank up.
What was going on in 529.22 was Memorial Day weekend? 420?
That was a squeeze. During that period of time, remember, we had a really serious spike in gas prices, which blew from my point of view because my daughter and I were going out west to do a race, and I was hauling my trailer.
So that had to be $4.50 you had to be paying.
Oh, let me tell you something. I did not like
many
four-letter words came out of my mouth, you know, pulling over every couple hundred miles to fill that tank. But yeah, this is the internals in this PPI number. What they're basically saying is, number one, services is, which is of course 70% of our economy, right? Services inflation is not going anywhere. It's still there. It's still real, and it's still extremely robust, shall we say? And then the short term dislocation that we got. Which seemed to make everybody, have orgasmic joy that rates are going to go down, that the Fed's going to cut rates. All of it in fuels, that's over. And within the next month or two, you're going to see that show up in the CPI, and that trend's going to reverse.
How are they able to? Because when I ask this, because during the 60 to 82 crunch, inflation crunch, these guys were unable... Let's say the old formula worked. When I say the old formula, the formula is so basic, it's scary. It's your nominal interest rate is going to be equal to the real rate of interest. In other words, how much you actually charge somebody for using your money, which through the centuries has been, what,
2.5-3%, somewhere in there.
Yeah, about 2.5, yeah.
And I mean, you know, in the Stone Age, if somebody borrowed 100 stones from you, you had to bring back 103 stones, right? And at the end of the year. And but you have to add to that people's perception of what the inflation is going to be, because if the if the inflation is 10% and the dollars you're giving back to the dude are worth 90% of what they were, you got to make that up too. So that that's what the. But now we're talking really since 2007, that has not that formula hasn't been close, especially in the 10-year rates and other stuff. Why are these guys just so powerful, or the Fed just so powerful? They're pouring so much money in that nobody even they can overwhelm anybody who tries to charge there. Something's weird. I could see it happening for a short period of time, Carl, but you know, 15, 20 years is a long time for that formula to be out. Part of it is, you, I guess, if you lie on the inflation numbers, but still, people shouldn't be that dumb to where...
Oh, but they are that dumb.
Well, I mean, I guess it's not dumb isn't the thing, because you got nowhere else to go, but, I mean, economically, you would
think... Well, wait a minute. Okay, but this does this has answers. The problem is nobody... So... Think about the how the government game actually works, okay? And I don't care what the issue is. I'm just going to pick on one, for example, because it's one that everybody knows about, which is DACA, okay? Obama, when he signed that executive order, stated that he knew, because the general counsel's office within the executive had told him, that it was unconstitutional. He had no authority to do it. There was nothing anywhere within federal law that Congress had passed that gave him the predicate to be able to issue that order. Okay? He stated this, that he knew it was illegal. So why did he do it? Because he also knew that he would create a couple of million people that got exempted from being deported by signing that EO. And that the amount of political pushback would be sufficient, that it didn't matter if it was against the law.
Well, yeah. I mean, it happens all the time.
Well, okay. So, why do you think this has been done within the monetary theater? It's exactly the same reason.
But, the difference is that the market is supposed to be all-knowing.
But the market has to operate on the same assumption. Okay, take a look at the same thing that Biden has done with student loans. The Supreme Court told him it's illegal. He did it anyway. Okay? Now, his gambit is that nobody is going to make those people pay that money back, and it's not actually forgiven. It's transferred to the national debt. But in the meantime, the person who got the $100,000 that disappeared off of their balance sheet now goes out and buys a car.
Well, or something. Gets well, to do something.
Buy something. Okay, maybe he goes and he drinks it. But the point is, it gets spent into the economy. All right? And the reason the market hasn't called BS on this and shut it down is because, historically speaking, nobody goes to jail for doing this.
It acts just like a tax cut.
And it never gets reversed. But the problem with it is that... it's the belly of the curve thing. I put an article up this morning on this, and it goes all the way back to what I originally pointed out when I wrote Leverage. It was one of the center points of the book. It was one of the first charts that I presented in there. And it is that when you start doing this, and you play this monetary game with inflation, it feels so good.
Well, sure it does.
And it feels like a free lunch. And everybody thinks it is, including all these people that know better and are supposedly smart enough to not get trapped by it. And the problem with it is that once you cross the two lines cross, for every dollar that you continue to put into the system this way, you get back less than a dollar GDP, and it exponentially accelerates. And we have crossed that barrier at this point. We are running a 6% fiscal deficit as a percentage of GDP. In a sane market, there would be nowhere on the rate curve that is less than 6%. And the longer you wanted to borrow, the higher the number would be. But there would be nowhere that's under 6.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, obviously, this is a subject that's near and dear to my heart. I mean, in 1977, inflation was 12%. You went down to the bank and you got 14.
Right. But well, now, that made sense.
Yeah, but now, 2 years ago, when the rate was, the inflation rate was 10, you went to the bank and you got 1. Right. I'm just curious how the hell they pulled it. I think they put so much in that if anybody...
Because nobody believed it would stay, it would continue, and yet here we are. Yeah. Everybody thought 10 would collapse the system within a week, right? But it didn't. And oh, by the way, we got away with it, so we'll do some more. And people believe that you can do this indefinitely and never pay for it.
Yeah, well, the difference... Let me see if I can find the date here. Now, our deficit is what percentage of the... We are... We're
6% of GDP.
Yeah, it's 6%. Well, but it's a huge amount of the... if you go back, what year are we talking about? 1980. The debt per taxpayer was 13 grand. Our national debt wasn't even $1 trillion. Right. So you could screw around and not blow us off the map. But now, if you make a mistake here, it's a whole different world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's not just a mistake. Is it somehow, somewhere, the damage that has been put into the system by doing... You know, people say it's not the same as it is with you personally. Oh, yes, it is. All right, it just takes longer. So, you know, if you've got a $50,000 credit line in your credit cards and you're making 40 grand a year and every month you're putting another 2 grand on to stay in front of, you know, in front of your income, right? You're spending more than you're making on a permanent basis. Eventually, somebody calls BS on this and you get shut down.
In 1980, that year, total debt per family was 81 grand. Now, this included government and everybody. And savings per family was 3,800. So, you know, not so good. Today, I'm going to go and say, well, wait a minute. I just hit the wrong one here. Sorry. I'm going to say, time machine, we are today. We are 2024, last time I checked. We got so much stuff going here. I'm going to say our debt per family right now has got to be like 400 grand or something.
And that's not going to get paid.
I don't know if I see per family. Savings per family is we're up to like 6 grand, and the debt per citizen. These things that is one of populated. There we go. Debt per citizen now is 76,000. Savings per family is 73. So we got the family out of here. But how many people are in a family? 3.2 or something? 4?
Yeah, it's I think it's 2 point something on average now.
Well, okay, so we're talking about 100 and some. Well, the debt per taxpayer of just national debt is 266 grand. That's a friggin' number. Debt per citizen is 103,000.
Yeah.
It's a lot of... Well, but that's somewhat, I think, wrong, because they're going to say taxpayer is somebody who pays federal income tax, but even if you don't, you're paying 15% to Medicare and the other stuff, right?
Well, I was going to say, there's this concept, well, except for the illegals that are being paid under the table and none that's being taken out, which, by the way, is the primary reason that all these employers love them. Because, guess what? That's money they pocket.
Well, we got a dash, but I don't know if you were listening the other day, the people that are lobbing these tax bills to the south side. And we'll talk about this a little bit on Tuesday.
Oh, I saw it. Yeah, I've seen some of that.
Some of these places, the houses are 65 grand. Audrey sold one a couple years ago, and the taxes are 6,500. It just went up 25%. Yep. So we're talking 8 grand. So that person, if he or she makes 40 grand, even you know, on a 1099 stuff, we're not paying any income tax. They're paying 15%. They're paying 6 on Medicare and the other stuff. They're paying a state. They're paying now 8 grand for your house. And oh, by the way, you got to be paying some sales tax someplace, motor fuel tax. I'm guessing they're up to pushing $20,000, $18,000, and they quote don't pay income tax. What a bunch of crap! That's unreal.
Yeah, and you know what? I've warned people of this for a very long time. I watched my parents' home equity, where they lived, be literally destroyed. On a nominal, not inflation adjusted, nominal basis, by a tripling in property taxes over the space of about 10, 12 years.
Yeah, and it's scary unless the prices All right, we got a dash crowd. We'll talk more about it on Tuesday. Have a nice weekend, buddy. S&P yep. futures up 3, NASDAQ futures down 4. Market's still trying to figure out what happened yesterday. I am, too. We'll let you know on Monday.
That's all, folks.